Hello Europe, hello world! Try not to get tied up in knots as we count all the medals of the Spanish rhythmic group. Be part of the team as we go to Austria to learn about gymnastics for all and celebrate O Power of Scotland ahead of the Commonwealth Games in Glasgow. All of that on this month's edition of the European Gymnastics Podcast. Hello Blythe Lawrence!
Hi Ollie Hogben!
And welcome to a really, really hot summer in Europe.
It is high summer in Europe. That's what I like to call it.
Yes, there's been a real heat wave. Hope you are keeping cool throughout Europe, wherever you're listening to us from. And I hope you've been enjoying the many gymnastics competitions that have been going on and everything that's about to happen, because June was a bit quiet, but now it is busy, busy, busy.
We've got the European Gym for Life Challenge, which is happening right now in Pistoia, Italy. And then next month, the big one, the Men's and Women's European Championships of Artistic Gymnastics in Croatia for the first time ever.
Yes, there's going to be a lot more on Zagreb in next month's episode. So, before we get too ahead of ourselves, Blythe, the news.
The news.
And, as ever, gymnastics fans, we're going to play a piece of music that was used to win a European title in the background. This one is from Artistic.
And it is for the super fans. Here we go. Melanie de Jesus dos Santos made her much-anticipated return at the French Championships, where she showed a new floor routine that pays homage to the music and culture of the Antilles. Her mind may be on Martinique, but her next stop is Paris, where she'll compete at September's World Challenge Cup. The Bulgarian men had a moment in Tashkent, winning half the golds on offer in World Challenge Cup competition. The standout performer there was vault champion Daniel Trifonov, who earned his second major title in 3 weeks. It's a season of renewal for Great Britain's Tasia James, back after a five-year layoff. James was fantastic at the World Challenge Cup in Koper, where she took silvers on vault and floor exercise. In rhythmic, Daria Varfolomeev showed her own unique turn at the World Challenge Cup in Cluj-Napoca. The skill could be named for her now in the code of points. Congratulations to aerobic gymnast Sabina Jurankova on her bronze medal in Nanchang, China, making history as the first Czech woman to win a World Cup medal in her category. Finally, we bid a fond farewell to newly retired Alexander Benda of Austria. Benda has the distinction of being the first Austrian man to make a World Championship all-around final back in 2021.
Right, that music took us back a bit. It took you back, didn't it, I bet?
Oh, if you are a fan of this sport, you know this piece of music.
Big words.
Big music.
Yeah,
big routine.
Absolutely. We'll tell you who it was at the end of the episode. Now, with music that took us back in time, why don't we jump back in time, not quite as far, to May and to the Rhythmic Gymnastics European Championships and the amazing performance of the Spanish group. Blythe, you're shaking your head in shock. Why were they so amazing?
Well, Spain did something that is very rarely done. They swept all three of the group titles at the European Championships, and they did that for the second consecutive year.
Yes, when you started saying that, I was about to go, no, Blythe, don't tell us what happened in 2025. Tell us what happened in 2026. Because they keep doing it.
We just sort of sat there in amazement and watched them. They were so assured, so confident. And when you have so many apparatus flying through the air and so many people on the carpet, that's not always the case.
So there was only one person that we could possibly start the episode off by talking to, and that is Inés Bergua, who is the captain of the Spanish group. And Blythe, you sat down with her for a fantastic interview.
It was all that they could have asked for, and even more. Spain's A-team. Don't you love it when a plan comes together?
We as a team are very ambitious. And I think that is one of the most important things too a team has to have, because if we aim low, we don't get to be higher than that goal. But if we aim really high, maybe we'll get there or not. But at least we're going to try with all of our forces to get there.
In Varna, you and the team delivered some of your best ever performances. And when a routine is going well, as commentators, We can sort of sense it. Do you sense it when you're out there on the carpet?
Yes, we can feel it. I mean, apart from what you can see as a gymnast inside of your own routine, you can see when something goes right, goes wrong. But apart from that, you can feel it. I mean, I was sensing that all five gymnasts on the carpet, we were having that connection, that union, like you had that feeling inside that everything was going well and that we were going to do it well until the end. So yeah, it's like in that moment you don't think about anything else. You don't know something for sure, but deeply you know it.
The Spanish team seems to have such immense character. You do feel like a genuine team, like that's what you're watching. What do you think makes a good team?
Trust. Trust is the most important thing in a group. Because many groups can have talent or they can be hardworking, of course. But if you don't trust each other, it's not going to work in the end. Many things can happen throughout the competitions or throughout the year. You can win medals or you can be defeated. And in all that process, you have to trust that your group is going to do it when it has to do it. And you have to trust that in the end, everything will work out when it has to.
Was there a moment that you can remember, like a definitive moment, where you thought as captain, like, oh, this is really coming together. We're really beginning to trust each other?
So it was kind of a process. And I think a definitive moment was in the European Championship last year in Tallinn. It was like a very crucial moment because the World Cups were very well. I mean, we got many medals and it was like, this is working. It's great. It's working, this new team. But the real moment when you had the pressure in Tallinn in the European Championship, when we wanted to do the same thing, it was when I realized, yeah, I trust this team and they trust me as a captain to guide them. Yeah, I think that moment was very like of a click for us.
At your first Senior World Championships back in 2021, the group finished 12th. 5 years later, you are on top of Europe, having swept the European Championships for the second straight year. What is the difference between 2021, Inés, and 2026, Inés?
I would say experience. I mean, the 2021 Ines was learning how to compete at the highest level of rhythmic gymnastics. My first world championship, my first European championship as a senior. And then in 2026, of course, I'm still learning and I will be learning every day until I retire. But I feel much more mature and with much more experience than when I did in 2021. And it's because of the things I have lived. Everything that has happened has built me up to the point where I am right now. Not only the medals, not only the success, but also the defeats, the times where when we did wrong, when I lost an apparatus or whatever, all of that has made me the gymnast and the person I am today.
Where do you think the big challenge is in rhythmic group gymnastics, maybe compared to when you're an individual out on the carpet?
Not giving up. I mean, of course, when you're individual, you don't give up for yourself. But when you're a group, you don't want to give up not only for yourself, but only for your group. Because everything that each of one does, says, or does not do, or does not say, it shows then on the work and on the competitions or how we act or how we do everything. So it's important that to know that you're sacrificing, the sacrifice you do, it's for everyone else. But it also gives to you that strength that you're not alone. If something goes wrong, well, you have some people that are going to support you. You have the team and the group that trusts you sometimes even more than you do yourself.
It's a wonderful philosophy, and it extends beyond sport, it feels like. It's
Yeah.
something that must help in life as well.
Yeah, without doubt, everything that I've learned throughout the years and that I'm still learning, I apply it to the rest aspects of my life. Because I think there's no such a teacher of life like sport is. I mean, in life too, you fail and you decide whether you continue trying or you give up. Well, in sport, I mean, every time a competition or a training does not go well or does not go as planned, it's when you have to show yourself what kind of person or what kind of athlete you are or you want to be.
But of course, mistakes do happen on the carpet. And when there is something that is quite visible, like a teammate or you losing an apparatus out of bounds, what then happens? Can you talk us through the next 10 seconds and how you all get the routine back on track?
It's true that when that happens at that exact moment, you almost don't think. I mean, you just act. It's like a very quick response. You don't have time to regret. You don't have time to stop, to talk to each other. You just have to try to continue the routine the best way possible. Because it does not matter the points you have just lost. What matters is the points you have left to gain. So it's very important that in training we practice that too. So then in the competition, we can do it naturally.
You do mention the medals, and there have been a lot of them. Has winning so much changed you in any way?
No, I mean, I'm the same person and I'm the same Ines, but I would be lying if I said that nothing has changed because my confidence has changed. For example, winning medals and doing a lot of things right makes you trust yourself and the people around you more. My confidence has gone up, but without doubt, throughout the years. But it's inevitable. It's something that comes along the way without pushing it. It's like a reaction. If you do something right, and then the effect is that you are gold medalist, of course, you start to believe of what you're really capable of, and you start to believe that the things that you have in your head and the dreams you want to achieve, maybe they are not only dreams, maybe they can really come true.
Thank you so much to Inés Bergua. Now, the European Gym for Life Challenge is taking place this month in Pistoia in Tuscany near Florence. There are worse places in the world to go to, aren't there?
Really are.
It's beautiful, Pistoia, the whole of Tuscany. Oh, yeah, gorgeous place. Now, Blythe, the European Gym for Life Challenge.
Gym for Life comes under the umbrella of Gymnastics for All, the most inclusive of all of the gymnastics disciplines. At this edition, there will be more than 20 countries represented by more than 130 groups, all told in excess of 3,000 gymnasts. And straight after it, in the same place, we have Eurogym too, which is a Gymnastics for All event for teenagers.
So Gymnastics for All, the ethos is universal participation, regardless of experience, regardless of ability, regardless of sporting background. It's very much got a non-competitive focus, hasn't it? We're not talking about, you know, massive scores being produced by judges and people waiting to see where they are on a leaderboard. It's about a kind of collaborative festival.
Exactly. What it is people do routines, group routines. You can't perform alone, actually. And in many ways, there are no rules. It's quite open. There's no code of points. We're not talking about difficulty, really. We are just talking more about artistry and execution. And just like you said, Ollie, the key word is inclusivity. Everybody has a place. Everybody has a role. It's a beautiful thing.
Well, let's get to know Gymnastics for All by spending a bit of time with a club that I think is just incredible. We're going to journey to the shores of Lake Constance at the northern foot of the Alps in Austria to meet Nina and Sarah, who are members of Tanzhaus Hohenems. If there is a club out there that's going to change how you see gymnastics, it's Tanzhaus Hohenems. They were at the World Gym for Life Challenge in Lisbon, Portugal last year. They were amazing there. They're amazing in everything that they do. They've got a profound message of inclusivity and of collaboration, of breaking down social barriers. They were also nominated for the Outstanding Performance Award at the European Gymnastics Awards last year. So a story well worth listening to. Here it is.
To me, Gymnastics for All means that it's really for all. So when you talk about Gymnastics for All, and since we are a group with dancers with disabilities and without disabilities, for us it's normal that we are part of Gymnastics for All, since it's for everyone. Hello, my name is Nina Amann, and I'm a found member and dancer of the Tanzhaus Hohenems. The Tanzhaus Hohenems is located in Hohenems. It's a city in Vorarlberg in the western part of Austria. And yes, we have been dancing since 2007. Well, the Tanzhaus Hohenems is, let's say, quite special because, yeah, we are a dance group with dancers with and without disabilities, knowing that each and every dancer has his own skills, abilities, and qualities. And this is something we would like to put together and, express it through creative dance and bring it on stage. Each and every dancer with and without disability is so different and has its own qualities and strength and character. I think one of the biggest points to point out is that we perform as a unit, you know, that it's not like, this is a group with dancers with disability and without disability. In Lisbon, we got such an amazing compliment after the performance. Audience came to us saying, we didn't really recognize that there are people and with disabilities and without disabilities dancing on stage together. And this is like, wow, okay, I think our coaches did a phenomenal job. For me personally, it's super exciting to see what this group can do and what this group can achieve. So we had several wonderful experiences abroad, and it's great when you see that you can travel around the world showing what you love to do, and it's working out. So this is just amazing, and when you see what's the power behind of it, and everyone is so happy and so excited and joyful about it, then it's just simply amazing, and you get like the spirit of it, and I think that's wonderful. For those who would like to get involved in gymnastics, I would say don't be afraid and just take the first step and then see where the path is leading you.
Hello, my name is Sarah Farbing and I'm a member of the Tanzhaus Hohenems and also a trainer. The vision of the Tanzhaus Hohenems is that it doesn't matter if you have a disability or not, because we all have different skills and we mix them together to create something special. I'm a member for over 15 years now, and at the beginning, I think I was a bit afraid of because I was not used to have contact with people with disabilities. But I think it really opens your mind, and after the years it really gets normal and you don't think about it. And I like that it really matters for your life. So it's not only in the group, but also when you're outside, it's normal to talk with the people with disabilities or offer them some help, and you're not shy anymore. There are several points that motivates me to be a part of the Tanzhaus Hohenems. On one hand, it's the joy we bring to our audience. On the stage, you can really feel that you touch their heart, and the great feedback we get after a performance is really overwhelming. And on the other hand, it's also the joy we have together, because we laugh a lot, we create our programs and our choreographies together. And it's fantastic to see how the program develops through the time. And the main point is that we all became friends. I think what we really want the audience to feel or show to them is that we show them what's possible, and that there are no borders, because just we're dancing with people with disabilities. Some people think, they cannot because they're not, they don't have a mobility like people have without a disability, maybe. But it's not like that. We're always finding a way how motion is possible for everybody. And I think we try to transfer this to the audience. And yeah, we always also try to touch their hearts. Yeah, it's just joyful. For me, gymnastics for all means that you come as you are and everyone is welcomed.
From a message of inclusivity and opportunity to inclusivity and opportunity of a different kind. One of the things we really want to do on the podcast is to shine the spotlight on parts of Europe that sometimes fly under the radar.
From the 23rd of July to the 2nd of August, the Commonwealth Games are going to be taking place in Glasgow. The artistic gymnastics component of that is going to happen from the 24th to the 28th of July. It is one of the major events on the summer calendar. We're both going to be there.
Yes, can't wait. Love Glasgow as a city. Love the Commonwealth Games. We're going to be doing the artistic gymnastics for the worldwide TV coverage.
And Ollie, you have more than one assignment at this Games. It's not just gymnastics for you.
Yes, I am privileged to be doing both the opening and closing ceremonies as well, which is a genuine dream come true. So what is the Commonwealth Games and how does it impact the gymnasts of Europe? Well, it's a multi-sport event for the 74 member associations of the Commonwealth of Nations, and that stretches right across the world. And what is so interesting about the Commonwealth Games is that you've often got athletes competing under the colours of a geographic entity that at Olympic level is part of a larger nation. So let's step away from Europe for a bit. Niue, which is a Polynesian island territory of New Zealand, that would be part of the New Zealand team at the Olympics, but it has its own squad at the Games, population of fewer than 2,000 people, competes under its own flag. Now, when you apply that to Europe, that is where it gets really interesting.
In Europe, there are 10 delegations to the Commonwealth Games, the Mediterranean islands of Cyprus and Malta, plus the four constituent countries of the United Kingdom, England, Northern Ireland, Scotland, and Wales, and also Gibraltar, plus the Isle of Man, which is an island in the Irish Sea, and Jersey and Guernsey.
And they're part of the Channel Islands in between the UK and France. So for those athletes, it's sometimes a once-in-a-career opportunity, isn't it, to be included in a multi-sport games and to represent part of Europe that we don't often see on the world stage?
The 2022 Games, 4 years ago, were in Birmingham in the UK, which had the most incredible atmosphere.
Oh, goodness me. I'll never forget it.
And the next edition is in the great gymnastics city of Glasgow.
Which is a city that you just go on and on about, don't you? Quite rightly, because it's a special city for gymnastics.
In the last dozen years, Glasgow has hosted three major gymnastics events. There were the Commonwealth Games back in 2014. The year after that, the World Championships. And then in 2018, they hosted the European Championships.
Yes, amazing city. Just vibrant, fun, friendly, great sporting city. So to find out a bit more about what the Commonwealth Games, or Com Games as we often shorten it to, what it means to the gymnasts of Europe, we spoke to Shannon Archer, who retired a couple of years ago after having won a bronze medal on vault at the Birmingham 2022 Games, becoming the first woman from Scotland ever to win an artistic gymnastics medal at the Commonwealth Games.
Gold medalist and all-around Scottish champion in a final Scottish gymnastics event representing South Essex, it's Shannon Archer.
What does the Commonwealth Games mean to you?
God, it's a big question. I think it's super important. I think as someone who has represented both Scotland and Great Britain, it's kind of common knowledge between like people who are representing Scotland that this is a really special event for us to do. And you really feel when you're there, everyone calls it the kind of like friendly games. And you really feel that like when you're there, it doesn't matter what country you're representing. If you see someone in the village experienced, and you'll say hi and you'll have a bit of a conversation, like, what sport do you do? What sport do I do? And even like within the competition itself, you can really feel everyone is like, yes, we're competitors against each other, but we can really feel that we're rooting for each other to do well as well. And it's overall, I would say, both times I've been up there were probably the nicest experience, but also the best experience of a gymnastics competition.
I've never been at a multi-sport games with an atmosphere like Birmingham 2022.
Yeah, I think that took me back of the atmosphere that we got in that arena. I think because for us, we were like, okay, it's in England. So it's like, it's not quite a home games, but it's kind of home-ish because it's in the UK. And I just remember like when we walked out, the amount of Scotland flags that we saw in the crowd and the noise was just unbelievable. I first walked out and I was like, oh, wow, like, this is big, this is loud, like, okay, we're ready to go now.
It was incredible, wasn't it? There was one man who almost single-handedly represented all of Scotland. He was wearing a kilt, obviously, and he had the biggest saltire that I've ever seen in my life. And he was always standing screaming. And I never quite worked out who he was, but he was incredible.
You can always rely on Scotland fans to be probably the loudest out of any country that's in there.
So in the vault final at the Commonwealth Games in 2022, you became the first Scottish woman to get on the podium in artistic gymnastics in the entire history of the Games.
Yes.
So how on earth does that feel?
It's still, even when, 4 years later, when you say that, it still feels a bit like, God, like that actually happened. Like, that was me that did that. I think you always, like, it was always a kind of like a dream of like, oh, I'd love to go and I'd love to win a medal. But it just never really felt like it was like within my grasp of like something that I can actually do. And I remember kind of the run up to Birmingham, me and my coach, we knew that like if anything was going to go well, it's going to be vault. Without saying it, we knew that if it goes well, there is a chance that I could get a medal here. But the words never came out of either of our mouths of like, okay, we're going for a medal here. I then qualified first for the vault final, which in itself I was unexpected. I didn't think I was going to be placed that highly. So then you kind of were like hearing things from outsider people being like, oh, like you qualified first, like this could be it, blah, blah, blah. And even then I was like, I don't want to hear it. I'm not talking about it. I'm just going to do the vaults, see what happens.
Because we all, from outside of your bubble, we all expected you to be a contender because you were known as one of the best vaulters in the Commonwealth. I mean, that was really clear. And there was a lot of discussion about it online, which obviously you did a great job of avoiding knowing was happening. And that's a real skill in itself for an athlete to keep themselves away from all of that. When did you actually realize you'd done it? When did you realize you'd gotten the podium?
So I went up last in the final, which also felt like the longest time of my life waiting to go. Normally a vault final goes quite quick. I felt like this was taking forever. So, and I tried like super hard to, like, I had earphones in, I wasn't watching because I didn't want to see what was happening ahead of me. But because the crowd was so loud, it's very easy to tell what's going on by the crowd's reaction. So I was kind of having a little bit of an idea of like who had done well, who had maybe not done well. And to be fair, the standard of that vault final, I feel like everyone upped in the final. So I was very unaware. And then I did my first vault and I got a penalty on that first vault. So the score wasn't as high as I was hoping it was going to be. So then that score came up and I was a bit like, oh no, like this second vault is going to have to be the best I've ever done if I'm going to get back in with a chance here. And I didn't. I was like, okay, I think that was the most nervous part of, like, after I'd done the vaults, I was a bit like, there was a bit of doubt. I was like, oh, I don't know if I've actually done enough here to make it happen. And then I didn't even look at the score or anything like that. I literally just saw my name come up and I saw the 3 next to my name. And I was just like, oh my God, we've actually done it. Like, that's a 3. That means I've won a medal.
And I
so
guess
it wasn't until that part.
I guess the noise of the crowd will have given you a pretty big clue with those incredible Scotland fans as well.
Yeah, I think as soon as I saw, like, the score came up, I saw the 3, the crowd just went crazy. And there was a lot of, like, either, like, the rest of the Scotland team were quite close to where the vault area was, and there were, like, team manager and all of those people. So that was, like, the first people that I spotted after when everyone was going nuts. And they were all, like, jumping up and down, and they were going crazy. And I was just kind of a bit like, oh, my God, like, is this my life right now? Like, is this actually happening? Like, is this a dream that I'm going to wake up from?
And it's not just your life right now. It's your life forever, because and it's beyond your life. It's all of Scottish sporting history. I mean, that's the amazing thing. There'll be others that will come along, but to be the first person to do it gives you that unique place in the history of Scottish sport. And I can see you smiling now, just realizing that.
I know, like, as I think now that I'm retired and I'm not kind of in it as much, I wouldn't say I really think about it that much now. So it's like when it, like, we speak about it again and then, like, you say things like that, I'm like, God, yeah, like, that is me that did that.
What does it mean to you, Shannon, to compete under the Scottish flag?
I think it's really special to be able to compete with that flag, because I think anyone who's from Scotland is representing Scotland. We are super proud of where we come from. We're super proud to represent Scotland. There's not many occasions where you get to represent your home nation. Normally it's Great Britain that you're representing. So to be able to have that Scotland flag on, and you know you've got the support of all Scottish fans around you, I think all of Team Scotland, whatever games that you've been a part of, you really feel like you're part of something special when you put on that Scotland kit. I don't know, but it's just like you're just like, oh, like, it just feels that little bit extra special of knowing that you're doing it for Scotland this time.
Plus, you've got one of the best anthems in all of world sport, haven't you?
It is a pretty good one, yes. And anytime you hear it, anytime there's a Scotland fan in the crowd, they are belting it out as well. So it's very loud.
And when you look back on it all, on what was an incredibly distinguished career, international medals, the first ever Commonwealth Games women's artistic gymnastics medal for your nation, multiple national titles, how do you feel about it all?
I think, again, this is probably something I don't do enough of now that I've retired. I think that, like, kind of when I look back on my career, I'm just really proud of what I was able to achieve. Like, even like domestically, internationally, winning that Commonwealth medal, dealing with all the ups and downs that in the life of gymnastics that everyone's got to deal with, from injuries, from kind of coming back from games and struggling a little bit mentally and trying to pick myself back up. I think there's been a lot of highs and lows throughout my career, but always being able to come back up, making it to games, making it to Birmingham and getting that medal. I think it's just overall just a really proud feeling of what it took to get there and then it all paying off.
And for now and forever, you will always be the first name in the record books for Scotland and women's artistic gymnastics at the Commonwealth Games. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been amazing having you on the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
Sadly, that brings us to the end of the July episode. And that means, Blythe, we're going to pack our bags for Glasgow. And when we come back, straight into a busy time.
Yes, indeed. It is the European Championships of Artistic Gymnastics, which will be happening in Croatia, and then the Rhythmic Gymnastics World Championships in Germany. So make sure you tune into next month's episode. It's going to be a great one.
Now, that music was from actually Birmingham in 1996. We mentioned Birmingham's the Commonwealth Games host city in 2022. So 30 years ago, come on, Blythe, you know who it was. It's one of your all-time faves as a young gymnastics fan.
The great Lilia Podkopaeva of Ukraine. But if you're a gymnastics fan, you already knew that.
Well, that is the end of our Lilia Podcast Paiva today. Sorry. And Blythe, how can people get in touch with us to say how much they want me to stop talking?
Follow European Gymnastics on social media.
And we would love to hear from you because we love the community that's building up around this podcast and we love the community that exists in the world of European gymnastics. So, with all of that in mind, thank you so much for listening and we look forward to your company on next month's summary edition of the European Gymnastics Podcast.